Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
It is the evening of February 22nd, 2023. Pitchers and catchers and position players have now reported to Goodyear, Arizona. So we're getting all of the lovely photo day pictures coming in. We're seeing players taking live batting practice. We're getting all the wonderful injury news that we inevitably know is going to happen early in spring every single year, but still kind of blindsides you whether you want it to or not. All those good things happening as we begin to ramp ourselves up towards the upcoming Cincinnati Reds baseball season. So we're back and we're going to do a little recording tonight. We got a fun guest to help us out through some of the storylines we've got early in camp right now. I'm Wick, back here hosting Walks Will Hunt for the second episode of the rebranded Old Red Reporter podcast. Joining me tonight, my co-host Brandon Kraling. BK, what's up, buddy?
How's it going, fellas? Yeah, just it's a balmy, it was like 70 something degrees here today. So I think we're already in mid-season form.
Yeah, you're a day behind where we are. It was 63 two days ago. It's right now. We have a degree and it feels like minus 11. It snowed about 3 inches and it's miserable outside. So yep. If you hear some snap, crackle and popping right now, it's because I'm sitting next to a fireplace. Which is actually a pretty damn nice way to record a podcast.
That's the 21st century version of the fireside chat. Right?
Fireside chat. So it was nice having the windows open chats yesterday, but this will do for now. So joining us tonight also is Doug Gray from RedsMinorLeagues.com, if I can talk correctly. Also Red Deck Nation. Doug, what's up, buddy? Thanks for joining us tonight.
I'm glad to be here. And I don't know. I can't speak for everybody. I don't have big expectations for the Reds this year, but I'm still excited that baseball's here.
Absolutely. Awesome. I mean, I think, expectations, you kind of have to have a baseline knowledge of what players are capable of to know what to expect from them. A lot of talent out there, but I honestly don't really know what to expect from like a solid 20 of the 26 guys that I'm expecting to make the opening day roster. And that includes some guys that have been around for a while. That includes Joey Votto, because I have no idea how healthy he's going to be. It's going to be fun to kind of see what breaks correctly, what breaks poorly, what breaks in half, because there's just so many unknowns out there that it's hard to be super optimistic about that many unknowns. But at the same point in time, I think through the collective unknown, there's going to be at least three or four players that we look up in a couple of months and we're like, wow, they're playing a lot better than I really expected them to. And that's kind of cool. And, you know, it's not quite as fun as looking up and seeing yourself, you know, four games up in the standings, but you know, you got to work with what you've got, and that's what they've given us. So we'll break it down. That's what we're going to try to do. So we've rebranded this podcast as Walks Will Hunt. So we're going to shift up the format of this because we can, and why the hell not? So we're going to jump right into fan questions because we've got a couple good ones. So we'll go with that. We can. Why not? We'll do that first. And then if we get around to talking about what we had on our outline later on, cool. If not, well, we'll just keep asking for more fan questions. So we'll start off with a special one. We've got Andrew Meads, who's been a longtime commenter at Red Reporter. He and his lovely wife just welcomed their first child into this world earlier this week. So we'll give a big round of applause and congrats to Carl for joining the dad club.
It's been a long time since he was burning packages of Oreos and taking pictures of it for Red Reporter.
Some of the original greatest fan posts out there. Yes. Yeah. Those were tremendous. I miss those days. But yeah, well, congrats to him. And he shot us a question saying, I want to know if you all think Scott Hatterberg is a good player. I'm going to say no. Scott Hatterberg just turned 53 years old and hadn't played baseball in 15 years. So my guess is he probably would not be very good. Was Scott Hatterberg a good player is another fun question, though, because I would say yes. Scott Hatterberg was a very good player. He had a better on-base percentage as a Cincinnati Red than the asshole wearing number 14 in the statue out front of the stadium. So he's got that going for him. What are your thoughts on Scott Hatterberg?
I'm wondering if you were to take 53-year-old Scott Hatterberg and then the gentleman who played him in Moneyball in the movie and gave them – pitched 10 balls to him for BP, who do you think would perform better at this point? Do you think Chris Pratt could knock a couple out of the park?
Who's tossing?
That's a good question also, right?
Homer Bailey.
Absolutely not. He wouldn't make contact.
I feel like I've got to give Hatterberg the benefit of the doubt there that he would at least have the better puncher's chance, given that was his profession for a while. I also have no idea what Scott's been up to for the last 15 years. He might be the most in-shape 53-year-old who's ever graced the planet at this point. I really don't know, but... I was a big Scott Hatterberg fan. That was a good bridge to Joey Votto at first base back in the early days of Red Reporter, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I remember being on Red Reporter watching or listening to the banana phone of when Adam Dunn called in. So obviously this Adam is a Milwaukee. Nod to that. Yeah, Adam from Milwaukee.
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, I guess the next question is, are we all wearing shirts or –
Right. I saw this question coming, so no, but I might put one on for the second half of this.
Oh yeah, I'm in sweatpants and sockless. I got bare feet out here up next to the fireplace. That's a good start. So that's how you record podcasts these days, folks, for all those people out there learning how to do the podcast process. This is being professional over here. So yeah, Scott Hatterberg, good throwback to some good old days of, well, let's be honest. The last time Scott Hatterberg was playing, the Reds were mired in being terrible, as they often are. But they had a really cool stash of prospects, Votto included, who were just sitting down there waiting as one of the top farm systems in baseball to hopefully emerge and take the Reds to places that they hadn't been in a long, long time. And that time it worked out. So, you know, maybe Scott Hatterberg is the Jake Fraley of this era. We don't know. We might find out. So
I thought Jake Fraley was like gonna be a prospect. Like, did they brought him in and was like, oh no, he's gonna be the center fielder in the future or whatever.
Yeah, he's gonna bat third and fourth for the
and now he's gonna be Scott Hatterberg.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know.
How did his stock fall this in the offseason?
Well, here we go. We can segue into our second fan question from our friend Carlos Guevara. Which two prospects do you see the Reds packaging in a deal next offseason to help the 2024 team win? This is if we're talking about a bridge here, and I don't want to give Fraley too little credit because he hit really damn well down the stretch last year. If I could if I would have thought ahead of time, and if I was going to talk about Jake Fraley, I'd pull up the article I wrote about him. But more or less over the last 180 to 200 plate appearances of the season last year, he was one of the 25 best hitters in baseball, which is not nothing. It's also not outlandish to say Jake Fraley can't do that. You know, hitting well has not been his problem. It's been staying on the field that's been his problem. But for a farm system that is full of 20, 21, 22-year-old players, a guy who's, what, 26, 27, you wonder how long the Reds are committed to him, despite the fact that he's still cheap, which is good for the Reds at this point in time. But back to Carlos's question, if the Reds are figuring out what they've got with their young guys and their rookies this year, seeing how their prospects progress, and they look up and they want to try to do a deal either at the trade deadline this year or this offseason to bring in a more established player somewhere to kind of augment how close they are to being a not rebuilding team and to being an emerging team. That's an interesting question because, A, what's the weakness? You know, what are they looking to add? You know, are they looking to add a proven veteran starting pitcher to go along with Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft and maybe some of the other guys who are hoping to break through this year? Or do they try to address the fact that they're losing Joey Votto after this year, assuming everything goes the way we expect it to, and they might need a more established offensive player out there? That's a pretty intriguing question. Doug, I think we'll turn to you here. There's such a glut of prospects right now up the middle, shortstop, potential second base guys, those kind of players. Obviously, that's a good thing because shortstop's the best. You want to have as many shortstops as possible because if you can play shortstop, you can play everywhere on the field in theory. Is that glut something that they could potentially use to address to go get, I don't know, Randy Arozarena in the offseason if the Reds decide to get a guy like that to be an anchor in the offensive lineup? Is that somewhere you think you see them potentially dealing from depth?
I mean, I think that's probably the only spot you really can deal from depth, and they've got a whole lot of it. I mean, I think that we can all agree that Ellie De La Cruz, short of something crazy, is not going to get moved.
Yeah.
But, I mean, behind him, I mean, just at shortstop, you've got Noel V. Marte, Edwin Arroyo, Matt McClain. I mean, Spencer Steer probably is. He's not a big league shortstop, but, I mean, he's played some minor league shortstop. If he – I mean, where does he play right now? Third base? First base? I mean, he's not going to play second because that's Jonathan India's spot.
Well, I mean, I think that he's the third baseman on opening day. I'm going to go that far.
Sure, but
I think he's going to get that shot, yeah.
I mean, he's going to get that shot. Let's just say he's just okay. He doesn't have a big season. He's just okay. He's solid. He's fine. But what if Christian Encarnacion Strand just tears up the minor leagues? Well, he's a third baseman / first baseman. I mean, maybe Spencer Steer could be, you know, prospect depth that you could trade. I mean, they have a lot of options there, and there's just I mean, there's no way they're going to have room for all these guys. And plus, some of these guys aren't going to work out. I mean, in all likelihood, right, half of them aren't going to become everyday big leaguers. Well, you want to make sure you make the right decision on who you're going to keep and who you're going to trade. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's going to be, you know, if you know they move Matt McClain. I think that on when you really look at the depth chart, even though he's a top 10 prospect for me, I mean, he's like fourth in line at two or three different positions that he plays. Right. And I mean, it's just, you know, that's just a bad position to be in if you plan on sticking around in an organization.
Right. It reminds me a lot of when the Reds had Todd Frazier, and it was kind of, you know, he was doing all the right things, and he was, you know, really, as he was coming up, he was, you know, tearing up the minor leagues and hitting at every level. And the question we always had was, oh, well, where's he going to play? You know, he's not going to play first. He's not going to play, you know, probably can't handle short at the big league level. And they, you know, ended up kind of clearing a spot for him at third, and it worked out. But, you know, there was, you know, that talk of him moving to the outfield and all that. So it kind of reminds me of like of that in that, you know, as long as if he hits, they'll find a place for him. It's just a matter of, you know, can he get to that point and, you know, really force their hand?
Yeah. And let's not forget that, you know, this time, barely a year ago, we were sitting around talking about Jose Barrero still being included in Baseball America's, not just top 100 prospects, but as the top rated prospect in the system by Baseball America, who's a organization that I respect tremendously about their valuation of prospects and how much things could change on the pecking order, so to speak, in just one calendar year. a whole lot of things could happen just even in the first couple months of this year. They might try to experiment somebody in center field. You know, obviously, Elly De La Cruz, I think, could be a tremendous center fielder given his physical tools. And in theory, he could hit well enough to be a plus overall player out there with the bat. Noelvi Marte's already started playing some third base in Arizona Fall League play. You take those two guys out of the shortstop equation and Jose Barrero doesn't hit again this year. And suddenly it's like, well, do they really have a glut at shortstop, or is it Matt McClain's job to need to have right now? A lot of things could change and shift in that regard.
At any point, you know, if Jonathan India gets hurt, then all of a sudden one of those, you know, prized middle infield spots opens up, and, you know, maybe you don't deal from that depth.
Yeah. Very, very true. Very, very true. And, it's a good position to be in, obviously. You know, they've got a lot of guys who in theory have versatility, but this is also a great question because we're also trying to project where they're going to be a year from now. We're not projecting it right now. And who knows? I mean, we could have four of those guys that we've already talked about be in different positions. And it could be Edwin Arroyo, who's the top prospect in the system this time of year from now. And it's a guy we haven't even talked about yet because he's barely in A-ball. So this
actually kind of brings up a good question to me in my mind, as far as if you're the Reds and you're at the point where you're at and you have all of these young guys and you've got all these prospects that are performing well, you have a lot of high rated prospects, and you, let's concede that the big league team is not going to be a playoff team this year, probably. So probably. Is it an opportunity to kind of rush some of those guys up and give them the big league at bats with big league instruction, with just kind of getting used to seeing big league pitching and living the lifestyle a little bit, so that, you know, when it does come time to, even if they struggle coming up more than they would if they had more seasoning down in the minor leagues. I'm curious to kind of get your guys' take on what the best kind of course of action would be for the Reds. Like, is it time to be aggressive with guys like that? Or, should they continue to just kind of like stay the course with their player development and, just like let them season in AAA as long as they need to and run out, you know, quadruple A guys, you know, at the big league level. What do you guys think?
I think that it might depend on the player. You know, you look at a guy like Elly De La Cruz or Christian Encarnacion Strand, you know, they've got all these tools. They can hit the ball 10 miles, but they both kind of had that really questionable strikeout to walk ratio this past year.
Right.
Now I'll say this much, watching Elly De La Cruz, I could see from at bat to at bat him putting things together. I do think that he's going to be able to cut down his strikeout rate a little bit in the big leagues. And I think he's going to walk more moving forward than he has in the past. Just based on watching him every day going, you know, you can really see him making those adjustments in game as he saw a pitcher throw more. And the more, the higher you get, you're going to have more information at your fingertips. You're going to have better scouting reports on all these pitchers you're facing. Granted, it's a lot better now than it was even a couple of years ago in the minor leagues. But I think with guys like that, you may want to take your time with them development-wise in AAA. Whereas a guy like Matt McClain, you know, he gets the strike zone very well. I think that he's got some things he needs to work on swing-wise to get the most out of his bat. But I wouldn't be concerned about him being completely overwhelmed if you rushed him, so to speak, up to the big leagues. Because I think that he understands the strike zone more than those guys do. I just don't think that his bat is as good as those two. But I don't think that he would just feel completely overwhelmed either facing big league pitching.
I agree with that. I mean, it's the aggressive approach at the plate versus the passive, you know, for lack of a better word, approach at the plate. And if you're tasked with having to be passive, I think McClain has a little bit more of what's the word I'm looking for here? I can't think of it. Anyway, it's almost like defensive. If you're forced to be defensive, which is something you might expect a rookie to be at the big league level for the first time, I think he's almost got that built in where Ellie's never had to be defensive, and it's not been his mindset. He's been aggressive, and it's worked for him tremendously. He didn't miss a beat when jumping from high A to double A last year. and many of the same for many of the same reasons, because he's aggressive and everybody knows he's aggressive and it's still working out for him. The jump to the big leagues might be the one spot where that might take a little bit more of a tweaking. And I do feel like McClain's, that's how he was up until last year. And last year, suddenly he started swinging for more power and it was a different profile for him. So McClain, perhaps more than anybody else, not in terms of how excited I am about them way, but in seeing if what he's worked on begins to pay off more kind of way, he might be the guy that I'm watching more to start this season than anybody else, because he was a guy who was picked to be a fast mover for all the reasons we're talking about, quote unquote, professional hitter, a first round pick multiple times over, a long history of being a known quantity out there. The way his kind of entire approach to the plate, tweaked last year relative to what he had always been before, which is, high contact, high average, not a ton of power, decent power. And the way he flipped that last year, it's going to be interesting to see whether he continues with that and makes the adjustments. If he kind of moves back to the other direction, because he realizes that might be his quicker path to the big leagues. And obviously, as we talked about before, where they actually choose to play him, considering, as Doug mentioned, he's second, third, or fourth at about three different positions in the depth chart right now. He might be the guy that I'm most interested to see how he comes out of the gate this year, because let's be honest, he might be the first guy called up out of this entire group if Jose Barrero isn't hitting, or if somebody gets hurt in the middle infield. It might be McClain, the guy they turn to first and say, well, he's ready, let's try him out and let's let everybody else out there kind of marinate. And not that that necessarily puts him higher up on the depth chart than some of the other guys in that same category. He just might be the first stopgap to get the opportunity. I don't know.
I definitely agree with you guys about Matt McClain, and even that, when you think about it, he's 2.5 years older than Ellie is, even you're given their respective levels and stuff and just kind of what they've done, up to this point, it does kind of hit home when it's like, well, he had all that seasoning in college, he was definitely going to be a fast mover. I definitely agree that he's probably going to debut. He's going to be the first one called up, I think, if assuming he doesn't make the team. But, the one thing about Ellie is, I don't know how much it's going to do him more good to see more AAA pitching. And, I think that there are probably, those peripherals that they're looking at as far as, strikeout to walk ratio, stuff like that, that they're really going to be using to judge his readiness or not. But it does feel a lot like there will be those kind of growing pains when he gets to the big leagues. And it's, to me, there is, I think, a question of when do you want to do that? Do you want to do that now in we'll already call this a lost season, or do you want to, have him working through those things while you have the rest of the team kind of working in that window to try and, be competitive.
Yeah, because I think calling Ellie up, you're calling the future of the franchise up. You're calling up the guy that everybody else who has watched the team be bad for as long as they are like, this is the superstar who's going to take us to the next level. You're not getting that by calling up Matt McClain. You're getting a guy who you hope turns out to be good, but let's be honest, the Reds have, the last couple of times they called up, top, quote unquote, top prospects, hasn't exactly gone swimmingly to start. So, obviously Nick Senzel, we're still hoping to get something out of him. Hunter Green, when he got called up, was struggled for the first couple months before really turned the corner out there as well. You call up Ellie, as young as he is, you got to get that timing right, because you don't want him to struggle. You want to make sure it's the right time for it. And I'm just not sure that they rush that. Even if he comes out and has the classic Chris Bryant type spring training where he hits more home runs than anybody else, and you're like, well, he needs to work on his defense for a couple weeks.
The only guy that I can,
a whole lot of other residual goodwill. He's going to have to. I think he's good enough to force his hand. But again, the Reds are going to have to be just a little bit patient on that, because the expectations are going to be riding on his shoulders so much differently than anybody else that I hope they get that right. Well, I hope they get a lot of things right, but that's the one thing that I really hope for his
development.
And for the future of everybody who's looking to him to be the next savior's sake also.
Yeah. And when you think about which prospects have they done this with and had success, you know, I think you don't have to look too far back to see, you know, Jonathan India. And it's like, you know, if they can kind of replicate that, you know, Matt McClain feels a lot like India, just in that sense of, you know, played, you know, middle infield at, you know, Division I school for, you know, as long as he did. And so it seems like maybe that's, you know, where that's probably McClain's ceiling. But, you know, maybe the answer is just to send Ellie to go play for UCLA for a couple of years and just kind of get him, some at bats in the College World Series and see what happens.
That would be, I'd feel bad for every pitcher that had to face him. They can they bring out the pitching screen? Because I mean, I don't want to see a pitcher throw the ball to Ellie with a metal bat. Like I don't care if they're like dead end now or whatever. I know.
He would hit 800-foot home runs. I'm here for it.
And he'd do it because he was trying to. Also, he'd just be like, "Nope, I'm going to try to hit this as far as I possibly can right now."
I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, some of these college relievers that throw 86 mile per hour fastballs. Like, what?
Yeah. Good. That's freaking luck, dude.
That's fun to think about. Well, considering I made a Jonathan India reference to Brandon Williamson in an article yesterday, I guess it was. Let's talk about Brandon Williamson. He seems to kind of be the, obviously we've not started actual games yet. When we do, it will be Brandon Williamson actually starting that game. He was tabbed by the Reds to be the first pitcher to get run out to the mound for their Cactus League opener, which I believe is Saturday. Is that Saturday?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
He's a guy who's, obviously a very talented pitcher, a big, big piece, if not the headline piece, of the deal that brought in the first haul from the Seattle Mariners when they sent Jesse Winker and Eugenio Suarez west almost 1 year ago today. A guy who's been familiar for a while, a second round pick, a former top 100 overall prospect by a couple different spots, struggled finding the strike zone last year in his first year in the Reds organization, but reached AAA. And despite, you know, having a little bit of a dip in his strikeout rate and an increase in his walk rate, he's still a guy whose stuff is still very much there. And knock on wood, and knock on everything out there, he's healthy. It's not an issue about being an injury per se with what his performance was last year. And he's hoping to kind of build off of that frustration. Got some news earlier today also that Justin Dunn, who's in competition for that fifth starter role coming out of spring training, is dealing with a shoulder injury and potentially is going to be set back again. Another former Seattle prospect who came over in one of the big deals last year also. Given the news that Brandon Williamson has looked good in camp, is going to be 25 and is kind of that next pitching prospect who's on the cusp to kind of break through. Pair that with the Dunn news, pair that with Luis Sessa, who had pitched in a starting role last year, but has kind of been a reliever for the last 5-6 years, almost exclusively. There seems to be a spot in that rotation that's just kind of like, it's, you can almost pencil Brandon Williamson in, assuming he doesn't pitch his way out of that role in spring training. Doug, what are your thoughts on his readiness right now and what seems to be kind of just the very parting of the waters path for him to kind of take that job and run with it in much the same way that India did at second base 2 years ago?
I mean, Charlie Coldsmith of the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote about Williamson, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago, and he had mentioned that Williamson picked up a cutter, which he didn't have before. More pitches is always better as long as they're good enough. And that one of the things that Williamson decided after watching, you know, video of his starts last year is that, you know, he's going to try and not make every breaking ball the most incredible breaking ball he's ever thrown in his life. Because 2 or 3 out of 10 of those work out the way that you want to, but that also leads to quite a few really bad pitches. So he's just trying to be more consistent with it and just have them all be good rather than all of them be, you know, the nastiest breaking ball you've ever seen in your life. And I think that probably does speak to one of the reasons his control was so questionable and inconsistent last year, is that maybe he was trying to do way too much. And so, you know, hopefully that'll lead to the Brandon Williamson that the Reds thought they traded for last year, guy who didn't have any walk issues and piled up a bunch of strikeouts versus a guy who really, I mean, he struggled to throw strikes quite often last year. Now, I think that, you know, the Reds are hoping that he's a guy who can kind of, you know, win this spot. I mean, he's got good stuff. And I mean, really, I mean, what are the other options they've got? A bunch of guys who were relievers that were mediocre relievers to bad relievers last year. I mean, I don't know what's his competition?
Right. I mean, I've got a theory that, you know, when Williams was traded for this time a year ago, he came in as a TCU product who had been not just roommates with and teammates with Nick Lodolo, but like best friends with. They spent all their time together. They spent time together this past offseason also. You know, the term overthrowing gets lobbed out there a bunch, but I do kind of wonder what had to been going through Williamson's mind last year when he's at Double A, he's at Triple A, and Lodolo's at the big league level, pitching well enough to finish sixth in the Rookie of the Year voting, who would have finished higher than that if he would have been healthy for the entire season. It almost, when you look back at it, and obviously I don't have the ability to say I've watched all of his starts and every single pitch out there, I did get a chance to watch him pitch a couple of times, and it almost looked like he was trying so hard, as you mentioned, with making every pitch the perfect pitch as opposed to getting the motions themselves down. It looked like he was pressing a little bit. It really did. And almost that he was like, wait a minute, my buddy's there. Why can't I be there doing that at that level? How do I get there the quickest possible route? And it seemed like over the course of the year, it kind of almost just it snowballed a little bit. So the fact that the Reds didn't go out and bring in anybody higher profile than Luke Weaver, who, you know, I said Williamson's in contention for the fifth starting spot. That's penciling Weaver in at number four, which is no guarantee for a guy who's been a reliever off and on the last couple of years and is, you know, not necessarily the most accomplished starter out there as well. There's a real chance for Brandon Williamson just to stake his claim right now, not just for this season, but for the next, you know, for his career. This is his opening right there. And the Reds didn't double up on him. They've given him that opportunity. And like you mentioned, there's, you know, Connor Overton, who is coming off a back injury and had, what, four or five great starts last year with iffy peripherals. And Sessa, who's probably going to pitch in a relief or modified role for Mexico in the World Baseball Classic, and who knows if he'll be stretched out and ready for opening day. That's it. That's who he's up against right now. And so it certainly seems like all the stars are aligning for him to kind of be that next Reds rookie to kind of jump out of spring training and jump forward. I hope he takes it and runs with it. I really do, because you know, 6'6 lefties who can hit 96 on the radar gun and have, when they kind of dial it back a little bit, a very placeable breaking ball the way he does. That's intriguing as hell, and I hope it's something that the Reds end up getting a very good player out of and get it as soon as this year, because if he's not ready, if he stumbles a little bit and has to take a step back, what's a really good front three of a rotation turns into a really iffy transition to the bullpen on 40% of the days of the week, doesn't it? So, right. PK, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, especially if you can end up with, you know, two young lefties in your rotation, you know, that's, I don't remember the last time that the Reds had two lefties in their rotation at all. So, you know, you know, they've just really not really invested in left-handed pitching much at all. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, as you said, I think his competition is, you know, Luis Sessa and guys like Connor Overton, who have just kind of been there and can eat innings and can do those things. You know, I think that there is definitely an inherent risk of having too many of those really young players in your rotation to where you're going to overtax your bullpen. And, you know, you have, if you have a whole, you know, a whole week of starts where guys go, you know, four or five innings every night and your bullpen has to pick up a lot of slack, I think that, you know, could end up being a situation where you know, maybe you do lean on a Connor Overton type guy going forward. But, you know, I definitely think the it's going to be the opportunity is going to be there for him to do it. It's, you know, just a matter of, you know, how does he look against hitters, and you know, how does he handle just kind of being in, you know, being in those games. And, you know, I'm definitely, he's probably the one pitcher that I'm excited to see the most.
Yeah, I agree with you in that regard as well. And, you know, the transition to the bullpen is a whole nother, just very, very interesting aspect about how the Reds went about this particular offseason. You know, we've already got news that TJ Antone is, you know, set back again from his second Tommy John surgery. And we're hoping we can get the TJ of old back at some point around the All-Star break at this point. Lucas Sims is coming back off a completely lost season. And while he looks good right now as a guy who's, you know, not exactly been the most healthy player in his career also, those two guys were supposed to be the big additions to a bullpen that really, really struggled mightily last year. And aside from that, there's not really a whole lot of other substantial additions out there. So getting to the bullpen is going to be one thing, and then trusting a bullpen back there is going to be something completely different. And, you know, factor in Dunn's injury and then that potentially taking one long man or swing man out of the equation. And then you get to the left-handed pitchers where, you know, David Bell has gone on record recently as hoping to have a second lefty in his bullpen this year alongside Reaver San Martin, who in his own right is not necessarily the most proven or accomplished bullpen piece either, despite the fact he pitched much better as a reliever last year than a starter. The Reds have brought in a number of different guys on either non-roster deals or as of today, they claim Bennett Sousa from the Chicago White Sox. Daniel Norris is in that mix. Alex Jung's in that mix. They're really going to be piecing together a bullpen as they try to piece together the back end of the rotation also. And, you know, not that needs to put more pressure on Brandon Williamson per se, but it certainly does sort of suggest that, hey, if you can go out there and give us 150 innings this year as, you know, our fourth or fifth starter and take the job from day one and run with it, that would help backfill a lot of other questions that we're going to have to ask if you can't. And so hopefully he's the kind of player who's in the position in his career right now to take that as a perk and not as a pressure point and runs with it, because you know, it's been a while since we've seen a quote unquote rookie. He's not a rookie yet because he hasn't been called up yet, but a guy who will be a rookie when he makes his first appearance, kind of have everything cleared out for him in spring training. And that's what's happened. It's something that, you know, sometimes you see later in April or sometimes in early May. But from day one, it looks like it's kind of going to be his job to lose. And they're giving him that that kind of endorsement of being the first pitcher out of the gate when games get started on Saturday. And that's knock on wood, that's going to be a good thing. And the next great development for this revamped Cincinnati Reds pitching staff. So, yeah. Anything else you guys have ruminating right now? Doug, you got any Wonderkin prospects that are about to take the Reds baseball world by storm or anything?
Ellie De La Cruz, but no, everybody knows.
Yeah.
You know, oh yeah. I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. That guy. There are two guys I'd say just to keep an eye on. I don't think that anybody's going to, you know, leap onto the scene early in the year and, you know, jump up to the big leagues with any sort of quickness, but two guys that I keep an eye on that are probably under the radar a little bit is catcher Daniel Vaoheen. Last spring, he broke his hamate bone. He missed the first couple of months of the season, came back, and he struggled. You know, the wrist was still bothering him a little bit. He hit really well over the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks of the season, and he went and just destroyed the ball in the Colombian Winter League. Now, in terms of Winter League baseball, that's probably, like, the sixth best Winter League out there. So,
right.
But he's also 22 years old. So, and, you know, there are some big leaguers that play in that league. So, you know, it's not like he's playing against a bunch of guys that are clearly below him on the totem pole. He had a very good year. He led the league in home runs by, like, I think he had 11 or 12, and the next closest guy had 7. Wow. This was just, like, 50 games. And he's known to be a good catcher. So, you know, he's a guy to keep an eye on that maybe starts getting some buzz in the second half. You know, Tyler Stevenson's going to be playing some a little bit of everywhere. But, you know, the two backup guys, I mean, I don't think anybody's too excited about it. If, you know, I've seen some people that are kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, Kurt Casale, but they're remembering Kurt Casale when he was in Cincinnati, you know, 3 years ago. Look at what he's done recently. He can't hit the ball out of the infield. Now, San Francisco is a big park, but I mean, he has not hit in since he left Cincinnati.
Kirk Cassell is effectively serving as like an assistant pitching coach right now.
And there's nothing wrong with backup catchers that don't really hit much. They're not expected to. They're not asked to. But if you get a guy who is a known quality defender who can also hit, hey, you know, they're probably not going to let Kirk Cassell or Luke Maley get in his way.
Right.
And then on the mound, I'd say keep an eye on Joe Boyle. You know, he may have some of the best stuff in the entire system between his fastball and his breaking ball. No idea how the Reds keep him in the rotation. You know, he's had plenty of success. He was actually my minor league pitcher of the year last year, but he's walked like 7.5 guys per 9 innings in the rotation. His stuff is just so good that when he doesn't walk guys, they still don't do anything. But I do think that his future is going to be in the bullpen. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, right out of the gate this year. But you know, if he does struggle a little bit in the rotation, I wouldn't be surprised if they moved him to the bullpen rather quickly, because I really don't believe anybody truly thinks he's going to figure it out enough to be a guy that you can give the ball to every fifth day. And if he goes to the bullpen, you're going to probably mitigate a little bit of his control issues, and that stuff might play up. And if that stuff plays up, I mean, it's really, really good already. So
he's like, I get big Tanner Rainey vibes from Joe Boyle. Is that a decent enough comp?
So yes and no. I think when you're talking about that pure stuff, now they do have different kind of stuff, but it's that good when it's there, it's incredible. The walk rates are the same between the two, but watching them, I think that Joe Boyle has better control, even though the walk rate might actually be a little bit higher. It's really weird because when you watch Joe Boyle pitch, he doesn't miss by that much, usually. But he misses a lot by a little bit.
That makes sense.
So if he can get, you know, a catcher that can frame him well, you know, look out.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll see that thing drop in half.
You know, what's interesting is I kind of want to go back and watch some of his starts is, oh my gosh, it was Baseball America. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. They had a thing, an article about how the Tampa Bay Rays have picked up pitchers that have had control issues in the past. And almost immediately when they come to Tampa Bay, their control improves.
They're fixed. I saw that as well.
And basically it was just like the catcher puts his glove in the middle of the strike zone and says, throw it here. That's pretty much what it was, but it worked. Like, they weren't asking these guys to try and hit the corner, or it was just throw it to the middle of the zone, or, you know, that's where I'm going to put my mitt. Throw it here and just let your natural stuff play. And guys have just started throwing strikes and having success, because the Rays are also doing this with guys that have really good stuff. I'm like, well, what about Joe Boyle? Would that work for him? Is that kind of been his issue? And I honestly don't know. I haven't gone back and watched enough of his starts to really, with this new information that, hey, maybe this does work, to see if that's kind of something that was going on before, or, you know, I don't know. But it's something that crossed my mind with very specific regard to Joe Boyle when I was reading that article.
So what you're saying is that when, back to Carlos's question, when the Reds try to trade for Randy Arozarena a year from now and they call and ask about Joe Boyle, the Reds should say no, but also, what do you know and why do you want him?
Well, you should always ask that question of the Rays when they call and ask for one of your players. But
Indeed, yes. That's interesting. And Barry Haynes as well, like that, you know, seeing him healthy and hitting as well as he did in Winterly Play, it's intriguing because the Reds have spent – they've spent a decent amount of draft capital the last couple of seasons on, you know, guys who they hope to be catchers in the mix going forward. And, you know, we've not seen Jackson Miller play since he got drafted. We've not seen a lot out of Matt Nelson. Chris Oakey's gone. So the next catcher would be nice to find, especially if Tyler Stevenson really is only going to catch 60, 65 games a year going forward. That's a, you know, talking about clear paths with Brandon Williamson. If a catcher can jump out and hit well and advance well and control pitching stats well, there's absolutely an opening for that within this organization also. So that'd be a nice perk if he comes out of the gate well and improves upon that Winter League performance. So, well, good stuff, guys. Well, Doug, thank you very much for hopping on with us this time, man. We'll look forward to having you back at some point in the near future and yapping about what else we can find, as spring training advances. But, I think it's about everything we had to jump in and cover tonight. Anything else you got, BK?
I'm good, man. I'm just excited for games to start up and looking forward to seeing how things start going on Saturday.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week with after the initial game action that we'll get on Saturday. The Reds and Guardians are facing off in Goodyear Ballpark to kick things off on Saturday. We'll see more videos of how close Joey Votto is to potentially getting back on the field. It looks like he's been a little bit mysterious in where he's been so far in spring. It doesn't look like he's 100%, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's not going to be ready for opening day. And who knows what Joey's gonna pull out of his hat to pull that off. But we should have more information on that, as well as all the other developments in camp, as things finally begin to get back to being the most normal spring training we've had since 2019, I guess, which seems like it was yesterday, but God, we're getting old. So, well, good stuff. Well, for Doug and for BK, I'm Wick, and thank you for listening. Like and subscribe where you find us. You can find us pretty much wherever you find podcasts these days. I say that. We'll have a couple changes to that coming up in just a few more weeks, and I'll get into details on that the next time around. But for now, thank you for listening to Walks Will Hunt, and we'll see you next week.